Hey everybody, this is Victor from Trustring. Today, I'm coming to you from a small little lake in the south of Poland, and I want to talk about the 7 mistakes that people make when building and managing a remote development team. And these are so frequent that they probably account for most of the bad things, or let's not call it bad things, but the things that make a team not productive or cause you not reach your desired result or timeline or goal or outcome. And so before we dive in, at Trustring, what we do is we help SaaS companies build and run productive development teams. We do that by doing 2 things. Number one, we have fractional CTOs. We have fractional CPOs. If you need any help with the leadership of your team, keep people accountable, create the right strategies, and so forth, then we have a great network of those people. And we help you build teams by either recruiting them for you. So we're a recruiting company, but we also have a network of tried and trusted software houses if you'd like or prefer a turnkey approach. Most importantly, you can just book a call with me and we'll just go through what's best for you, right? So that aside, what are the 7 mistakes that I see over and over again that people make? Number one is having the CTO manage your dev team. And so half of you are probably going to be like, is that not what the CTO is supposed to be doing? And the answer is, well, it would be great. It would be ideal. But most CTOs, and now let's backtrack a little because we're calling them a CTO, but really most, whatever the tech lead is in your company, whoever that is, the highest technical person, maybe your technical co-founder, maybe your lead developer, whoever that is, right? Chances are they're not a people person, right? They're not a good manager. Because most engineers, unlike a lot of marketers or other professions, the more senior they are, the more they just want to learn and code, right? And become better at that and improve their craft. They're really passionate about it. But they really don't care about the management part. Again, that's very different from things like, say, marketing, where people want to become CMO and then really do anything anymore, but just have brilliant ideas and let other people do it. Very different. And then you might ask, like, what's the purpose of my tech lead then? Well, and the answer is they decide how to do things, right? How do we build things? That's the tech lead's decision. They have the last word. They have the say when it comes to how are we going to implement this, but not necessarily what and in which order and to project manage all of that, because that's the product domain. The product person, that doesn't have to be the same person, right? The product lead decides what we're building and in what order. And once that is done, the tech lead says, well, how are we going to do that, right? And so whether that's going to be a delivery manager, project manager, product manager, when you have a team of more than 3 engineers, that's the person who's then responsible for actually making sure things get done. That's number one. Number two is not treating your outsourced or remote developers like your own team, right? So if you have an agency, if you work with outsourced or remote developers, maybe they're just contractors, a lot of people make the mistake of just treating them like external parties, being very careful about sharing information, not being, I don't want to say not being friendly with them, but not engaging with someone as if they were their own team. And so that's a very big mistake. You can build amazing rapport and amazing loyalty and all of that, even with an outsourced dev team. You just need to allow yourself to treat them like your team. And so every time I convince someone to actually go and visit and spend a couple of days with them, I know it's a flight ticket, I know it takes a bit of time, but it's worth it 10 times over. Because whenever people come back, they say, well, we talked about so many things and people were so interested in learning more. I would have never thought, like on the Zoom calls, they seem to be so not interested and so distant. And so now when I went out and we had dinner, we had lunches, we had time off, we played a game, we talked about so many things concerning the business, the people, the clients, the motivations. And with all that context now being ingrained within the team, every Zoom call that happens afterwards is just so much better, so much more productive. And most importantly, people can now make decisions on their own and they don't have to go back to you. every single time for every single small thing that's not properly documented. So those team retreats are super, super, super important and definitely worth their money, because obviously on Zoom, on calls, you're in between things, you're busy, you're not properly blocking time off, and you don't really transmit things like body language. You don't do small talk. You don't have personal conversations, right? So that is what you need to do there. Third mistake is that if people understand their business or magically think on their own about it, and that's precisely really ties into number two here, because once people have the right tools, meaning the knowledge, the context, which is the customer personas, ideally be able to look into customer interviews, customer journeys, see a company roadmap, OKRs, clear and concrete business goals, understanding the real world outcomes behind every epic and user story and what somebody's doing. That gives them the tools to understand and make those decisions on their own. Number four is, and that's a big one, not securing proper agreements in terms of IP and securing all assets. So a buyer and sometimes investors, right, they will diligently check your IP ownership. Like, that is the most crucial thing, because if you don't own that, there's nothing to transfer. And now you might say, well, I have that in an agreement somewhere, but the details matter, right? Firstly, if your agreement, which is very common, says, well, the IP, you own the IP once you pay for all the services, which actually makes sense from a business perspective. I would agree to that, right? Because that's one of the only tools a software house has to make sure you pay them, right, in a way. But the problem now is an investor or a buyer will look at that and say, now, in order to know if you own all of the IP, you want me to check every single bank transfer to make sure you paid for all of this, because otherwise you don't. That's really complicated, and jurisdictions matter and those things like that. So it does make sense, rather sooner than later, to talk to a lawyer, set up the right agreement just for IP. You can do that on the side. And with that, what you then do is basically just sign that with every single person that's not your in-house employee that works on your code base. And then the second thing that we see oftentimes is not taking ownership over all the assets that you own from day one. By assets, I mean things like your server. Do not buy that from a software house or any other accounts for that matter. Use your own GitHub. Own your assets. Otherwise, there might be a situation where somebody is going to want to strong arm you, and you want to have the upper hand here. And so if you don't know how to do that, what to do here, hire a fractional CTO. They can help. They can help secure everything and set things up. Obviously, never give out admin accounts. Always give out sub accounts, limited accesses, and things like that. Do backups and all of those things. I've pretty much never had any of that happen, but it's just a good security measurement. And again, if you want to sell, you need to do that anyway. Mistake number six is essentially working with the wrong type of developer or service provider, right? If you work, you know, part-time, full-time people, agencies, freelancers, and type of agency really matter, right? Full-time and in-house is always more dedicated, but part-time and freelance are better if, you know, you're not that certain that you can sustain an in-house team, right? Because you can scale freelancers or agencies up or down, but you cannot scale, you can scale your in-house team up, but really not scale them down, right? That's going to make them talk and think if you do that, right? So if you think that something's only ad hoc, or you're not certain if that's going to be sustainable next year, better use an external provider. Or if you want something done turnkey, right? Let's say you're a SaaS, but you really have no in-house knowledge about mobile. It's a project for a couple months. Don't hire in-house. Hire a software house that comes with the mobile knowledge, can do this turnkey, and you have to not have to worry about delivery or certain edge cases, right? So that's a turnkey process. So for me, if you have in-house, or if you don't have any in-house tech or product leadership, you should go with a software house that can provide that as well. Good UI, UX, good product research, business analysis, they can create documentation, and so on and so forth. If, on the other side, you have that in-house, you have a product lead, you have a tech lead, then you can go to a software house that all they do is develop, right? So they provide a turnkey development process, you give them backlog, they just build, right? if you don't want the turnkey processing, you want to be able to build your own team, manage all that, you definitely have to have tech leadership. You have to be able to make those decisions. You have to be good at product, and then you can build your own team. And then you just need to work with a recruiter or outstaffer that, you know, does a payroll, international payroll and contracting for you. We obviously do all of that, right? So if you're in need of more developers, we have a network of all of the providers here, and we recruit and outstaff on our own. Mistake number six is misunderstanding estimations and how they work in software development and what a role uncertainty plays, right? So uncertainties in software development will always exist. So there's different kinds, right? Different kinds of uncertainties. For example, something might not be well enough documented, or something, there may be a new technology that you can't fully estimate. There may be a legacy code base that it's just a bit unpredictable. There may be external APIs that you just don't know if they provide what you need them to do, or just, you know, a new team whose velocity is not fully clear, right? So all of that influences estimations, influences the predictability of software development. But the most important thing that you can do is not just accept that and be like, okay, so that just means, well, I don't know when things will be done. No, you need to quantify the uncertainty and understand it. So first, you need a way to just measure uncertainty per task. You need a broken down list of tasks, very detailed, to make sure you go into the nitty-gritty here. Then you ask your team to tell you how uncertain each of these tasks is. And the easiest way to do that is to estimate in ranges or do a 3-point estimation, not a 1-point estimation, because that will essentially show you what the size of the range is. Like, a small range means somebody's more certain than a big range. And so that just means that wherever there's a big range, you can now go in and talk to your developers and be like, okay, why is this so uncertain? What's the risk here? Understand that. And you can either minimize the uncertainty by researching the thing or replacing the solution with something else, or minimize the impact of that uncertainty, meaning to reprioritize. So you don't derail your entire development project at the beginning, but do that at the end, or just move on from it afterwards, right? When the sprint ends and you're at the very bottom and that's not being done yet, you just cut it off right there and move on to the next thing, and you release without that. And that's really what Scrum really always meant to be, and not like today, shouldn't be an excuse for anyone to deliver anything at any time they deem they're done, or just move to the next sprint and is never done, right? So these are the 7 mistakes. If you have any questions, leave them in the comments. If you found this useful, you know, just hit subscribe, hit the bell. And if you want to talk any of that through, I'm here, book a call. There's a link in the description. Looking forward to talking to you, and wish you a wonderful rest of your day.